This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back. No reptiles, everything, everything. So we're going back to Cape Town where Gareth is. And Gareth, I just got a tweet here from Lee. It says, got my money ready in a brown paper bag. Hashtag invest, Cliff Central.
Yeah, we're launching this hashtag invest product this morning. And I'm very, very pleased that sitting in front of me is one of South Africa's most successful entrepreneurs, somebody who really can claim that word. There are a lot of people who throw the word entrepreneur around. And Ben, this guy has lived it. He's experienced it. He's been tremendously successful in every avenue of the retail sector, some other businesses that we'll get into in a while. We'll talk a little bit about his re-entry into the mining business. There's excitement around things like Stellar Capital, which we can talk about too. But Dr. Christo Visser really is an inspiring South African who's done terrific things. And we were just talking about title deeds, which he and I started a discussion on too. But we'll get into that in a second. I'm going to be passing the mic back and forth because we haven't got everything working here as well as I would hope it would. When I set it up earlier this morning. But Dr. Visser, what a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much for coming to speak to us. Your story has been one of, I think, really just doing for ordinary South Africans what I suppose is a very basic thing, is providing them with an opportunity of getting good quality stuff at the best prices. And if you have that as a guiding philosophy, I think that's a great way to start a business. Thank you so much for coming to speak to us this morning. It's great to have you here to tell your story.
Thanks, Gareth. Well, you know, it's generally accepted that the only raison d'etre for a business is to provide for an economic need. But people sometimes overlook something else, particularly when you deal with people with limited budgets. A business should also strive to add quality to the life of the people that it serves. For instance, somebody on a limited budget places huge value, as they should, on being properly clothed, not clothed in hand-me-downs or ill-fitting clothes. And I've always been grateful that our main business, Pep Stores, had been able to make that possible for people on a low budget. The same applies to this whole title deed initiative of the Free Market Foundation, where we give people title deeds to the little piece of property that in many cases they'd occupied for decades, but it's not theirs. It's not theirs. They can do nothing with it. And the dignity that comes with a person being able to say, this is my piece of South Africa, legally mine, nobody can take it away from me. I often make the comment that, you know, people don't expect me and Julius Malema to agree on too many things. But on this, I do agree with him when once he said that what people need to understand is that black people in this country also want to be owners. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Visser, while we're on this issue, because I didn't expect us to go straight into the politics, there's lots of good stuff to discuss. But, you know, when you have a piece of land, however small it might be, it gives you something to borrow against. It gives you the opportunity to start all kinds of initiatives that you might not have if you didn't have the security in the first place of owning something.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, this entire philosophy was articulated very well years ago by a Peruvian economist, Hernando de Soto, who wrote a book called The Mystery of Capital, in which he made the statement that poor people around the world own trillions of dollars worth of assets, but they can do nothing with it because they do not have title. And we are, through this initiative, hoping to change that in South Africa.
Well, when you look at 22 years of democracy and you think about how far we have come in many respects, it is kind of disappointing that our government has in those 22 years not been able in rural areas to give people title deeds, that often that authority lies with the chiefs, with the leaders in those hierarchies, who are not necessarily in a hurry to pass on the autonomy that a title deed might give these people, because it keeps them in thrall. It keeps them in a position of need and subservience towards that chief, right? I think that's probably something we could really do very easily, and we could force these tribal authorities to hand over that land to ordinary people, and it would immediately it would I think alleviate some of the stresses around very poor people and their inability to participate in the economy generally.
Well, you know, it is one of those things in South Africa that make a lot of people despondent. I always say I'm never despondent, but I am extremely frustrated, because as you say, things like granting title to people, there are between 7 and 11 million informal homes where this whole aspect is applicable. And by the stroke of a pen, that can be put right by government, central, provincial, local government. So it is one of those things that defines South Africa in the sense, as General Smuts said a century ago, South Africa is that peculiar country where things are never as good as they should be, but never as bad as they could be. So, but we should strive as South Africans to make it the great country that it should be by doing simple initiatives like this. But you touched on it. One has to ask the question. I asked Hernando de Soto the question. Why are governments reluctant to do this obvious initiative? And the answer is very simple. It is about control. Because if you leave that person as defenseless as people without a title deed to the little piece of land on which their home is built, they need you. You have control.
Dr. Visa, there's so much about your story that I read in the recent Forbes Africa magazine where you were on the cover. And you don't often do these sorts of interviews and things. I think you're not the kind of guy who likes to grandstand or your story around. But it was inspiring to me, because there are many young South Africans now who are being told at school, at university, that the way to make it in the world is to be an entrepreneur, to start your own business. It's easy to say that. But to actually walk that talk is entirely a different thing. When you started off, I mean, you studied law. This is something that you did. You probably at that point were fairly sure that that would be your career. But very quickly things changed. You decided to buy up a few stores you had relatives in retail. Do you just want to explain to people how it all began for you? Because that transition from being someone who was in a profession to someone who started really driving their own career path and doing things very out of the ordinary, very out of the box. And at that time in South Africa, I think quite a maverick move. For many people, that transition is the part that they struggle to comprehend as possible for themselves. And it isn't possible for everybody. How did it happen for you?
Well, I just want to correct one thing, Gareth, and that is that I already in my third year of a five-year course at university decided that I was going to go into business. So that, you know, the law, the drama, the glamour about practicing as an advocate did appeal to me, particularly to impress girls. But I decided that, you know, I was going to make my career in business. I did break for a short period. For 4 or 5 years, I did practice law at the Cape Bar, which I enjoyed tremendously. But one of my colleagues there told me, Christo, you had been spoiled, because having tasted the excitement of commerce, you are never going to be a long-term lawyer. And that was very true. So therefore, there was not really that element of transition, I suppose. But, you know, how does it happen? I think people often ask me, what is the secret to be a successful businessman or entrepreneur? The first requirement is you've got to have a great appetite for risk. That means you have to be a very positive person. Because if you get up in the morning and analyze all the things that can go wrong with you today, over which you have absolutely no control, then people who have a very low appetite for risk will tend not to get out of bed. So the first element is you must be happy to take risk, and you can only do that if you're positive. If your outlook on life is a positive one, look for the good things and not the bad things. And the second simple part of the formula is just to work your butt off. If you're positive and you're happy to work and pay the price in that regard, then success follows.
I'm curious, though, about those when you bring risk up. There must have been times where it was very difficult. There must have been times where you had a brief pang of fear, of nervousness, anxiety around what you were doing, moments where it wasn't so clear that success was absolutely on the cards.
Well, success is never guaranteed, in spite of what I said earlier on. It is ultimately guaranteed if you stay the course and if you accept that things go up and they do go down. And as I say often, as a consequence of things over which you have no control. Brexit is something that you have no control over. Donald Trump becoming president of the United States, you have no control. A 40-year drought, you have no control, and all those things impact. So, but part of having a positive attitude is to understand and believe that although things may look pretty bleak today, the sun will rise tomorrow, and you've just got to deal with it. And just to touch on what you've said, I've had plenty of moments where, you know, things looked pretty bleak and hugely dangerous.
Did you ever in those moments perhaps lose hope or think, I might end up, you know, having to mortgage the house, I might end up having to sell off some of my assets, I might be in some trouble here? In the early days, did you have those fears?
Often. I was often in that position. But I always made clear to people that my house was mortgaged from day one. I mean, that's part of it. That's part of assuming risk, putting what you have on the table. I mean, you know, Rudyard Kipling articulated it beautifully, that if you can put it all on the wheel and lose and not be diminished, that's right.
Lose and so start again at your beginning and never breathe a word about
that. There's a great truth in that.
You know, Dr. Visa, it's interesting now when I look at this range of companies, and you know, Brait has been an incredible success. You're buying up companies left, right, and center. You invest in many different things. You've got a very interesting and varied portfolio of assets. Which of these is to you the one that you have to spend the most time paying attention to, the one that you have to be the most vigilant about, because it might be a very new business, it might be a very fragile business? A lot of these things are a lot more susceptible to things like Brexit, to international currency changes, to political pressures. And which one of them gives you the most joy? Which one are you most proud of in retrospect, and with years of hindsight now, are able to say, well, that was something that I've just got a tremendous amount of pride in, the way that it's changed and grown?
In many respects, these businesses are all the same, Gareth. It's like your children. It's very difficult to choose a favorite. They all have their different quirks and characteristics that, you know, are appealing or sometimes less appealing, but they're all the same. And in all instances, you've got to be constantly vigilant. You turn your back on your business, it will bite you in the backside. That's just a fundamental law of the universe. That's number one. Number two, what gives me the greatest pleasure is the fact that globally today, our bigger group employs 300,000 people. And those people have all got exciting career paths. I mean, what I have seen over my 50 years in business, people that had a very low self-image, but who grew in the business because they were nurtured, they were protected, they were trained, and they reached heights that they never dreamt they were possible of reaching. That gives the most satisfaction of all.
You mentioned the people, and people are hugely important in business. You've always been one of those people who's been able to identify the talent and been able to nurture the best around you. Is delegation and picking the right people an important quality to be able to harness?
Obviously, you know, when a business reaches the size that our businesses are today, it is all about people. Now, this mystical ability to choose the right people is also something that's overblown. You know, there isn't a magic wand. Fortunately, in my life, I managed to work with more people that were good than those who were not so good. But I think it's more luck than wisdom. But what can you use as a guiding principle is to get to know a person and to understand that you share the same values. That's the only guideline that you can follow. And that's not so difficult at the end of the day.
You have had a huge amount of success in your life, and now perhaps it's appropriate for you to kind of enjoy more of your time and be around your family a little more. But when you see things like Forbes rich lists and you see your supposed value in numbers being put on the front pages of magazines and so on, does it make you uncomfortable, or is it a source of pride? Because I remember I asked Natie Kirsch about this a while ago, and he said to me, well, you know, I'm rich. I've done well. I'm very rich. It's one of the measures that people use to determine your value. But is it also something that you find a little awkward when it's brought up in conversation? It's considered impolite in some places for people to talk about money like that.
I think to a very large extent it is impolite, but it's the world we live in. It's a real world. And I have tried over my life not to change from the person that I was in Upington. You know, the so-called barefoot little boy. I must say I always had shoes, but that's the image. And I drive my own car. I live on the same premises that I'd lived for 42 years. We'd rebuilt the bungalow in Clifton. But I don't particularly hanker after the trappings of wealth or, you know, glamour or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, these rich lists are in many ways a nuisance. And the fact of the matter is they always get it wrong. They never know the full story. But if it serves as some kind of encouragement to some people to say, well, but if that guy could do it, coming from Upington, surely I can do it. There's nothing special about him. And if it serves that purpose, if it encourages people or serves as inspiration, then it's fine. Then I ignore the negatives that go with it.
You say that you're not interested in the trappings, and I completely believe you, because you seem to me to be one of those people who's very down to earth. You're approachable. People come up to you all the time and ask you things. You've still occupied the same offices that you've been in almost all your career. But there must be occasionally some indulgences you grant yourself. I mean, there must sometimes be things that you go, well, you know what? I feel like doing this, or I feel like going there, or I feel like buying that. And for many people, these material things are the things that attract them to the idea of success. They might not necessarily be the right measure for success, but do you give yourself a chance sometimes to enjoy things? I mean, you have really earned it.
Well, I do, and you're quite right. Obviously, one says to oneself, but I mean, what's the point of it all? I mean, there are many wealthy people around the world who don't seem to enjoy anything of the money that they've earned. I'm not like that. I've got a beautiful wine estate. I've got a game farm, Lorenzfeld. I've got a beautiful game reserve in the Kalahari. I enjoy those things. My wife is a very enthusiastic art collector. She has wonderful art. And those things do give pleasure. And I have no feelings of guilt about enjoying those things. None at all.
When it comes to the world economy, and when it comes to those things that you mentioned earlier that are out of your control, things like Brexit and so on, does it ever get under your skin that sometimes you see the value of businesses that you've grown sometimes incrementally, that you've had to put in those long slog hours, that you've had to think about things like the price of an article in a shop, that you've had to think about what the market can and can't afford? Does it make you a little anxious to imagine that the value can fluctuate so much because of things out of your control? And is that something that you have to just let go of and let it be? Or is it something that you try to influence?
Gareth, there are very few advantages to growing old, having been around a long time. But one of the advantages is that you fully understand that these things will happen. Things will go down, but they will go up again. And that's part of the makeup of a, as people call it, successful business people. You know, I have a difficulty with defining success in a certain way, but because too many people think success is simply material gain. You know, it's life's about much more than that. But as I say, ultimately, you have to understand that things will go up and down. That's the way the world works. If you take Brexit as an example, the mere fact of Brexit made the pound lose 30% of its value in 3 months. That had a 30% impact on the Brexit share price. Now, I want to add there, we South Africans were up in arms, and rightly so, during Nennygate, when the rand lost just over 20% of its value in a very short space of time. Britain, which has the fifth largest economy in the world, saw their currency plummet by 30%. That's how life works.
How has Donald Trump's election as president-elect, how has that affected your companies?
Well, no direct effect that we are currently aware of, except to say that the world, inter alia, as a consequence of his unexpected election, is in more turmoil now than it was a month ago. So, to that extent, all businesses are affected. There's huge uncertainty. People don't quite know how to position themselves. Our philosophy in our business remains as it has been in South Africa and around the world. We continue to just put our heads down and do the best we can, knowing that tomorrow things should start going better again. They may go worse before they go better, but that's part of the game.
You know, Dr. Visa, you said earlier you're a positive person, and that's part of being able to take risks, is that you're hoping for the positive result. I think a lot of South Africans get caught in negativity, and we get trapped by a lack of perspective. It does help with your experience, your wisdom, your age, to be able to look back with sort of a longer lens of history and be able to see that all of these things, whether good or bad in the short term, in the long term have a much more muted effect. Is that part of the reason that most South Africans get very hyped up and very anxious and very nervous and very upset by the day-to-day politics? They react immediately and in a knee-jerk fashion to things like when Julius goes on about land yesterday, or when the president fires the finance minister, and they immediately assume, oh, well, it's all a disaster. Do you have any words of kind of sage, sensible wisdom around these things that might be able to remind people that it's never as bad, as you rightly quoted Jan Smuts earlier, it's never as bad as they think it is, but it's also a lot better than they think it is?
I think that's a great truth. You know, I mean, the Bible teaches, count your blessings. You know, that's what we all should do. Look where we live. I mean, we live in paradise. And So we need to deal with these issues, because people have to deal with issues all around the world. And I think as a lesson to young business people, I can quote a very prominent South African industrialist who once said that when he started out in business, had he known how difficult it was going to be, he would never have started. Yet, towards the end of his life, looking back, he marveled at how easy it was. And that's the basic lesson.
The one other thing that I think a lot of people would be interested in is, you know, you're a man who's done so much already. And there are many people who think that, you know, you should be retired by a certain age, that you shouldn't keep going. You still have a huge amount of energy. You still have a massive contribution to make. Are there still things on your to-do list that are very much preoccupying you? Are there reasons for you to not completely rest on your laurels? You know, things have changed a lot. I think in your parents' generation, maybe people would have been thinking about quietly sitting in an old age home and doing nothing. These days, being in your 70s is only the beginning for some people. I mean, there are people who've really only started to do things that are impactful in society and the economy at the age of 50 or 60. And there are very many people who run companies well into their 80s, even their 90s. If you look at the some of the greatest investors in the world today, some of the people who own massive companies all over the planet, these are people who are very vital in their 70s and 80s. What's still on your to-do list? And what's your message to people who think that it's all over if you haven't made it by 40?
Well, it's never all over. That's, you know, that's the first point. Secondly, you know, as long as you have your health and you enjoy what you're doing, all that remains on my wish list is to keep doing what I've been doing for 50 years. There's no specific target at all. And I just, as I say, as long as I'm healthy and I enjoy what I'm doing, and I feel, and more importantly, other people feel that I still have a contribution to make, then I will carry on.
There is a thrill, though, and I think it's a unique talent that some people possess. I don't think it's something that can be learnt, but it must give you a thrill to take a rand and turn it into 20 rand.
Clearly it does, because it is all about a competitive spirit at the end of the day, because quite frankly, you know, these figures with all these noughts, what does it really mean? In South Africa, if you've got, a fraction of the wealth that Forbes ascribes to people like myself, you can live like a king. So the value of the money beyond a certain point is marginal.
I've always wondered, and you're the right guy to ask about this. You know, when someone advertises a house in the newspapers or you see it in these property magazines and they say this house is worth 50 million rand, and then they show you another house that's worth 100 million rand, I got to be honest, I don't really see that much of a difference between the 50 million rand and the 100 million rand house. Maybe there's an extra room, maybe there's an indoor cinema, but I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, right?
It is kind of ridiculous, but you know, my simple approach, I mean, wine is the best example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can anybody in the world really believe that there is a difference between a bottle of wine, which already in London costs £1,000, and a bottle that costs £20,000. I mean, it just becomes ridiculous. On the other hand, if that's what turns that person on who's prepared to pay that ridiculous amount of money and thereby helping somebody else, let him be. The same thing with these houses. You know, there's this Indian billionaire that has a house in Mumbai that's 57 stories. A skyscraper is his house. But if that's what turns him on, he didn't steal the money. Let him enjoy it. It's not for me, though.
It must be a source of some pride to you that your children are also successful in their own right, that you have a family, it seems to me, that are really, they stick together. You guys are the kind of people who have good values at the core of everything. For you and your wife, it must be gratifying to know that, you know, things are good in the next generation too, that you're able to hand on a legacy of of sensible ideas, a good approach to life, a healthy way of living. It seems to me that that probably is the greatest reward of all.
I would agree with that. There is no greater treasure than having children that you can be proud of and that are people of value, that have good, sensible values and that are happy and healthy. There is no greater treasure than that. And I'm very grateful that it worked that way in my life. It could easily have gone differently.
Well, Dr. Visa, thank you for talking to us this morning. It's really a pleasure to have you here for the launch of our little investment product, which I think will hopefully bring a whole lot more people to the stock market. Just the same way as you and Julius are on the same side in terms of land, I think on this issue of the stock market being sort of an elitist thing, we need to change that, and this is maybe one of the ways to do that. I'm excited to have you here. Thank you for all the on behalf of all those South Africans that you've helped to be able to afford good quality clothing, good quality products in your grocery stores, all the rest of it. I wish you only the best going forward, and thank you for making some time for us today. It's a great pleasure to have you here.
Great pleasure. Thanks, Gareth.
Thank you so much. Dr. Christo Visa. Ben, I'm going to hand over to you to take control of things, and we're going to start the launch of #Invest, our brand new product. And Anthea Gardner is here from Cartesian Capital. We've got Charles Savage from Easy Equities, and we'll report back tomorrow on what went on from 8:30 onwards this morning. Thank you very much.
All right, Gareth, best of luck. Can't wait to hear that. Okay. Tomorrow, the full team will be back. Gareth will be back. My buddy will hopefully be back. But hey, Michael and I slow for another half an hour because it is your Tuesday, and if you're on the way to work, then good luck with that. If you listen to podcasts, well, hopefully you had a good day. Never gonna be alone, gonna be alone. That was Matthew Moll with Run, Touch Central, Cliff Central. So it's been a busy morning. Gareth is in Cape Town. My buddy is still ill, unfortunately. So if you do love my buddy, then chat to her on social media. Give her a message of support. It means wonders. I tell you what, it means wonders. She'll be back tomorrow, hopefully. She's just battling with the voice because she's got a bit of a cough. But yeah, today is the big Invest launch. So we've been talking about this for months, about the fact that you can be part of the stock market with us here at Cliff Central, Touch Central. Michael, are you going to be investing?
Yeah, I'm going to try to do like R100 a month. I think I can do that.
That's what I'm down for. Just start a little bit slow. And, you know, it really is for everyone. So no matter what your take on finance, saving, all that kind of stuff, we've got Anthony Gardner. She's going to be basically spearheading this whole thing. So we can't go too far wrong. And you know what? Like I said, it's absolutely for everyone. I mean, even if this is you and this is your way of taking the alphabet, it's for you.
And also, she's like on the show every morning.
Sorry, I was trying to play a clip there. Badly. Yes, Michael.
And also, like, Anthea's on the show every morning. So, you know, like, a lot of people who have shares in that, they'll phone their broker every morning to get an update.
Yes, good point.
We basically bring you the update.
Yeah, it's right there. You feel connected to your portfolio.
Yeah, it's like you don't have to put in any effort. Just fix up that monthly debit or credit order, whatever you call it nowadays.
Yeah.
And then it's done. Make money, honey.
Spot on, Michael. I think the two of us just inadvertently made the advert for Invest.
Yeah, we can cut that little podlet
just
out.
Cut that. Done.
Of the Ben and Flax morning show.
Yeah, there it is. It's just the two of us today. So what I was trying to get at, even if you're really not that bright when it comes to finance, like this woman I'm about to play now, the Invest is for everyone. But just this is this woman's take on the alphabet. How about this?
For 18, B for Benz, C for Silver, D for Dimple, E for India, F for Effort, G for Jeep, like a Pajero, H for Ha, Amen, I for Eyebrow, J for Gentleman, K for Cake, L for Elbow, M for Embarrass, N for Embad, O for Australia, P for Pizza, Q for Cucumber, R for...
Fees must fall. Let's get people in school first. How about that? L for elbow, K for cake.
At least she got pizza right.
Did she?
Yeah, she got P for pizza.
P for pizza. Q for cucumber.
Q for cucumber. I mean, why mess around with the letter C when cucumber goes straight to the point, huh? So I found something very interesting about, you know, like drones. There was this big thing about them. It's still kind of ongoing, like this invasion of privacy, and you need a license to fly a drone. There's legislation around a drone, and like there's, you know, just human rights and all that kind of shit and privacy. So a guy in America, though, well, he's got a drone and he's done something a little bit different to it. His name is Mike Rowe, and let's feel his tale of woe right now.
Hey guys, I'm Yaug, and recently I found out that my wife's been cheating on me. Yep, great, right? Yeah, I caught her meeting a guy only a few blocks from my home, and I got it on video. Here's the video. All right, so we're going to pick this up right here. She leaves our home, and she's going to end up walking all the way down here and around to the CVS parking lot up there.
Okay, so basically, there's this video. We'll put it on the Cliff Central site for you. He's taken his drone, and he's showing the town, okay? So the wife works basically around the corner from the local supermarket. So here's Mark following her with the drone.
And I started to get a little bit upset. And sure enough, she was going to meet this sucker. And here she is waiting at the intersection, waiting at the light for what it seems like forever. And here she is taking her hair out. Got to make herself look pretty. Got to make yourself look pretty for the guy you're about to cheat on your husband with, right? Yep. Make sure your hair is all nice.
Just gonna let you know, Mike's not taking this too well just yet.
She's pulling her hair out, making sure it looks all nice for this sucker. Now she walks across the street, and this guy is hiding behind the CVS. And as soon as she gets here, he's gonna come out. So I'm assuming she's on the phone with him. That's the only thing I can assume. Cause watch, here he comes. There he is. There's the guy, asshole, that my wife is cheating on me with. My wife of 18 years. And watch, if you watch carefully, you're gonna be able to see 18 years go right down the fucking drain. Watch. If you're not paying attention, you might miss it. Here it comes. There it goes! Boom! 18 years! Gone! 18 f***ing years! Gone!
So basically, she gets into the car, and then that's where he loses it. It's really funny how this guy's done it, because obviously he realized this is going on, right? But his drone camera work is absolutely amazing. I mean, if this gets you chicks in life, Mike, worry not. The world is your oyster with your drone camera.
I love the use of the drone to catch cheating. There are, since the creation of the drone, there's been drone boning, which was when they put a dildo on a drone and then they started like having sex with drones.
What?
There was drone fishing, where they sent a drone out with a fishing hook. Someone even tried drone kite surfing. They had like a massive drone which dragged them around. There's just endless uses for drones, which oaks are just figuring out.
But unfortunately, a drone cannot make you smarter.
D for dimple, E for India, F for effort, G for jeep, like a pajero, H for ha, amen, I for eyebrow, J for gentleman, K for
J for gentleman. I like that. I like that. Maybe it's like a whole different language. We're going to be more sensitive towards people and how they do things differently in this world. So, Michael, what's happening in the show tomorrow? Tomorrow is the Wednesday.
What's happening in the show tomorrow? Let me pull up tomorrow's calendar.
Okay, while I do that, get into the messages here. Ian, I'm sorry. We couldn't have any sort of discussion with Christo. So there was no kind of Q&A there. Gareth's a very busy man right now. That whole hashtag invest launch is all kicking off. And then Danao sent a message. Morning team, the show is perfect. Well, Danao, thank you very much, but you're just being nice. I know the show's been a bit ropey of late, but don't worry, things are going to settle in. The team will be back to normal quite soon. But she goes on to say, I love it. Ben's B problem is because he's so sweet and yummy. Yeah, Danao, I thought so too. I really did. That was it. When are you doing a drunk show? I guess, I don't know, like we used to drink a bit in the beginning, but that's because Leanne was here. She says she would love to hear Flax drunk. Oh, batong. Can you please address how unfair life is? I got 35% for plagiarizing an introduction on my assignment, and Melania Trump plagiarized Michelle Obama's speech, and she's become a first lady. How could Melania get a big fat reward, but I get punished for just copying an introduction? Oh, mother, this life. Dunno, we feel for you. You probably shouldn't plagiarize, but hey, you know, everyone's got a source, I guess. But yeah, keep those messages coming in. If anything, take consolation in this. You write really well. That was one of the nicest messages we've had for quite some time. So you carry on with that. Michael, tomorrow?
So tomorrow we got big-time actor and filmmaker Tapela Mokoena. And he was also on the first version of Fear Factor in South Africa. So how crazy is that?
Oh, right. So that was a while ago.
Fear Factor?
No, that was a while ago. I think Fear Factor internationally then broke down because essentially it was all about really great stunts. And then obviously there were budget cuts. So they couldn't have stunts. So basically they just had girls with big boobs eating like horse cock and weird stuff. Like, the show really got messy towards the end there.
Like, two things I remember from watching it as a child was someone, like, having to lie in a pit of snakes or spiders. Yeah. And then having to eat, like, testicles of weird animals.
Yeah, it literally got down to the part where the show could have been called Eating Genitals in a Bikini.
Like, why would people subject themselves to that?
Because the fear. I mean, if I walked in there right now with a massive horse cock, slapped you in the face and said, eat this, you'd feel a bit scared, right?
How much would you put on the table for that?
I'd put 32 inches of this horse cock. That's all you're getting.
You got to put cash down to make people do things that they normally wouldn't do.
Yeah, obviously, if you win Fear Factor, there's the incentive of winning it because you've won a game show and there's monetary rights. But, I mean, look, I don't want anyone's balls in my mouth, let alone a pig, a cow, a shark. I don't know. Whoever's got balls, Fear Factor's putting them in your mouth.
Do you know who's probably like carrying on the tradition of Fear Factor is Dan Bilzerian. I follow him on Snapchat, and he like bets people and dares people for mad amounts of cash to do stupid things. Like, he'll have like a bodyguard with him, and then he'll say, yo, go swim across this river, which is probably like a kilometer long, and I'll give you $30,000. And the dude gets in this freezing cold river, starts swimming. Halfway across the river, he gets stopped by like the police in the river and gets arrested. And then Dan's like, no, sorry, you didn't complete the challenge. You don't get your $30,000.
Yeah, well, he's a dick. Another thing that's a big deal on the internet right now is the whole Planet Earth 2 thing, right? Now, we've seen all kinds of things so far. We've seen the iguana running away from the snakes. People are going on about the fact that the cinematography and everything is just absolutely incredible. Well, the latest thing that everyone is gushing over is the snow leopards. I mean, this has been happening this week. This is going to give you an idea of what you're going to be bombarded with over social media. Snow leopards.
The cub is now in danger. Mother must act fast. To divert the male's attention from her cub, she rolls over submissively. With the males fixed on the female, the cub has a chance to escape.
Wow, I want to watch this so desperately. I don't think there's a single thing on this earth right now that I want to watch more than Planet Earth 2. Like, it's just crazy, and it just shows that animals are way more interesting than humans. There's way too many animals, not enough snow leopards. So there's one thing you can do today, save a snow leopard, maybe not save a human. If we can get like a million snow leopards, how cool would that be? Look how fun they are. They fight over women just like we do. They have offspring just like we do, only they're much better looking. And Richard Attenborough is more excited about it. That's pretty much it for the show today. A couple more messages to kind of look at before we get out of here. B says, our government needs to come to the party in a major way in order for data to fall. And I'm happy that they are willing to listen. I just hope that this will lead to some form of transformation in the ITC sector. B, that's what we're really pushing for here as well. I mean, we're always having issues with data. We're having issues with connectivity as Africans. I mean, even today when Gareth was in Cape Town, that's just a poor line. Every now and again, it gets dropped, and it's just dreadful. It just really is just dreadful. A couple of other messages, but basically only just two or three words, basically saying, hi, guys, you're great. I always hate those because when you read them, it sounds like we're making it up. Anyway, the show's back to normal as of tomorrow. Gareth will be back. He's got a big day today in Cape Town. So follow him on all the social media, just at Gareth Cliff on Twitter and Instagram to see what's happening with the hashtag invest thing. Yes, we're bringing the stock market to you. We brought the radio to you, and now, or proper radio, and now we're bringing the stock market to you. And Michelle finally says, well done, Ben and Mike, for handling the show. I'm very excited for the new invest venture. We'll be all on, Michelle. So up next, Kat and Ari, they're taking selfies as we speak. Touch Central FM and cliffcentral.com. See you tomorrow.
This is cliffcentral.com.